You're listening to the Happy Doc Student Podcast, a podcast dedicated to providing clarity to the often mysterious doctoral process. Do you feel like you're losing your mind? Let me and my guests show you how to put more joy in your journey and graduate with your sanity, health, and relationships intact. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Frederick, and on today's episode, I welcome Daniel C. Daniel is the co-founder of Spacemakers, a productivity consulting group for busy leaders. As a trainer, coach, and keynote speaker, he has worked with CEOs, executives, and other senior professionals throughout Australia and beyond. His book, Spacemaker, How to Unplug, Unwind, and Think Clearly in the Digital Age, won the Australian Business Book Award in 2021 in the personal development category. And I have to say, Daniel, I am not surprised. I finished your book a few weeks ago, and it has been a game changer for me in terms of understanding how I can create space in my life. And so I am so excited to introduce you to my audience. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Heather.
Why don't we start with you sharing how it is that you became interested in the meaning and making of space?
Space. I mean, we all need space, don't we? Space to think deeply and restfully and reconnect with people in ways that matter. I think I'm quite a spiritual person. So I'm a very type A personality. I like to get stuff done. You know, I'm a father of three kids and I live in community. I've started a number of businesses, etc. But behind that all, I really do care about the inner life and living from maybe the inside out, not just the outside in. But probably the journey really started when I nearly burnt out when I was about 30, in my early 30s. You know, I had young kids, I was building a house, I was leading a physiotherapy set of practices and also starting this small business. It was way too much. And I just started to get breathing problems. That was a real wake-up call for me. And it scared me because I had a friend who burnt out a few years before me. And he ended up not being able to work for years and never really returned to his normal way of living. And I could see that happening. And I was breathless all the time, you know, at the dinner table. I was breathless reading books to my kids. I was breathless just doing very simple things. And it wasn't medical. It was anxiety. And it was stress and tiredness and a lack of sleep. And just realized, yeah, just pushing myself too hard. And it was a wake-up call that actually life is more than my work. And I had to start to build in new ways of putting in space in my life. So a coach helped me, which was great, helped me to build patterns and rhythms into my life to value slowing down in some ways and reassessing my priorities and who I am and why I did what I did. And all of that I call making space because we need space in the whirlwind of life to live our best life and to experience the world the way we can.
I love this term spacemaker. I've been using it with my family and friends since I read your book. I want to be part of the spacemaking team. You know, like yourself, I come from a culture where slowing down maybe isn't valued.
Yeah, and there's such a beauty to making space. And there are different periods of time. I honor and realize that, you know, when I had young kids and I was building a house and I was building businesses. Like when you start a business, there is a certain reality that you just have to work your guts out because otherwise you don't get paid and you have to get that next client, et cetera. I'm sure, you know, there are periods of being a doctoral student where you just have to work your guts out to get started. But there are also times when we need to slow down. I like productivity consultant Stephen Covey, and he talks about the importance of intentional imbalance. So there may be seasons, you know, maybe a season being half a year or a year of your life where you are really flat out and you realize that it's not sustainable. If you lived that way for the next 2 or 3 years, you wouldn't have great health or relationships. Your heart and soul wouldn't be in alignment with your activities and a whole lot of other things wouldn't work well, but you're investing in something really significant for the future. So I think there's times, but we really can't live that way long term. And it's not how we're designed to live. It doesn't work from a productivity and success perspective. And it doesn't work from a humanity perspective because we're more than economic generators. We're more than cogs in a machine. And And we really need to make space to think about who we are and where we're heading so we live our own life and not someone else's script, so we don't just follow whatever everyone else is doing just because we're running to stand still.
You know, when you talk about you might have some periods or seasons of imbalance, that's okay, right? There might be times where we really have to hit it hard. But if you have this understanding that there are ways to build in these rhythms, to build in these patterns, and you're compassionate with yourself, maybe you can't take an entire day of rest every week, but maybe you can take a few hours every week or every other week or do something to give yourself this opportunity to be intentional about unplugging, it is truly an investment, not just for anyone in a human body, but I would argue, especially for a doctoral student, because you need time to process the information you're taking in through your classes, through your research. And if you're just going and not giving yourself a break to just cognitively, physically, spiritually, emotionally relax, it has an impact on your scholarly contributions. I've seen this time and time again.
That's fascinating. So I'm not a PhD, you know, I haven't done a PhD, but I am a knowledge expert and I work a lot with knowledge experts. And the thing about being a knowledge expert, I mean, I'm paid for my ideas, for what I say and for the insights that I come up with. So in that sense, I think there's a lot of similarities because you're not just paid to write stuff on paper, are you? You're paid to actually look at the data and distill it and to work out how it's meaningful and how it impacts the world in some type of tangible, important way. And those creative insights don't come without space. The research on creativity is very, very clear. And it doesn't even come the way you expect. There's another good book, which was released after mine. It's not quite as practical, but it's brilliant. It's called Stolen Focus by Johann Hari. And he talks about the importance of mind wandering. And the fact that not only do we need to have times of focus, which you can't do if you're always online, but you need to actually have times where your mind wanders, which is not the same as scanning Instagram and just filling your mind with different thoughts or ruminating about the same thing again and again. It's actually more that point where you're at peace enough with yourself, you're undistracted, and you leave space for your mind to simply wander and to create and to think. And then you have those aha moments. And all of the stuff that has really shaped my writing and my thinking comes from the disciplines and practices of those space-making moments. I walk every day without a phone and ruminate. I have practices where I jot things down when I have ideas and I let them sit. You know, in preparing for this podcast, I listened to your podcast the night before knowing that something would happen in my brain overnight, rather than me having to cram at the last minute and have a sense of who your audience is. So it's about starting to recognize that the need for gaps and pauses or margin or space in order to come up with your best ideas. And it's absolutely critical to do that.
And you know, Daniel, you may not have a PhD. I wish I could give you an honorary one because the research that you read, that you analyzed, that you synthesized, that you distilled, is really a systematic literature review. It is a type of doctoral outcome for many programs. And so for those listeners out there that are going, hey, this sounds kind of interesting, but I'm wondering, is there really research to back this up? I'm telling you, get the book, because some of this research I was aware of, but there was other research in there you shared, like the aversive shock and being people would rather. Do you want to tell? I mean, this was, sure. I couldn't wait to share this. This was so interesting to me.
Sure, that's funny. It did take me 7 years to write, and I really did spend 7 years. It felt like what I imagined a PhD would feel like. I cried at many points thinking I can't finish this. In fact, actually, may I just say, 6 months before we released the book, I sat down with my team and we decided to release it as a book blog because I couldn't finish it. And we were going to put it out as chapters as a blog. And I'm so glad we did, but we almost did. So I'm sure that might be how people feel at the end of a long doctoral process. The research. Okay. So, I mean, this is in the end of my book. So it's more about the practices section rather than the changing your paradigm. But there was this study by Timothy Wilson from the University of Virginia, and he wanted to understand how people thought and what it was like for them to reflect on their own thoughts. And so he put people in a room, was a comfortable room, but just had no devices, no stimulation, and just said, sit and reflect on your thoughts for 6 to 15 minutes. And then he asked people how they would describe that experience. And a lot of people said they found it painful. So not even uncomfortable, but actually physically painful to have their own thoughts and to reflect on them without distraction. And so he wanted to compare, well, what do they mean by that? So I don't know how he got ethics approval, but he got a zapping machine and gave people electric shocks, which were so painful that they would pay $5 or more not to have that painful zap again. So he electrocuted people. And then he put another cohort in a room after having had that and did the same thing and said, just sit by yourself and think about your own thoughts. Hey, there's that zapping machine in the corner if you want to, but you know, we don't encourage it, but hey, it's there, I suppose, if you want to. And 67% of American men and 25% of women chose to zap themselves with painful electric shocks rather than enjoy their own thoughts in silence. And I think that says an awful lot about the lack of space and how we're so used to reaching for a device to distract ourselves. We're so used to that dopamine hit. And because of that, I think it's not so much that we needed the dopamine hit. My hypothesis is that those clients have a whole lot of unresolved emotional stuff and thoughts and painful experiences and hopes and dreams. So the inner life has not been addressed for so long that when you stop, it's really painful. And that's actually the process that we have to go through to get to the delight of space making. There's this point where when you stop, you think those things that you've been avoiding thinking and running away from, but you need to be able to process and reflect on those thoughts for long enough on a regular enough basis to the point where I love being by myself. I love sitting just by myself and just being thankful for the world and being at peace with the muck in my life and the messiness of who I am, but also incredibly grateful that, you know, I can breathe and the simple things in life are incredibly joyful, and I don't need much more than that. It takes practice, and we're losing that in our culture.
And, you know, that was towards the end of your book when you start getting into more of the practical things, but it was something that caused me great pause. And really, kind of when I was circled back around to the beginning, you talk about creating a philosophy around technology. And I have to say, after I read that, I had to put the book away for a week and really do a deep dive, because I realized no one's ever asked me that. I haven't asked myself that. And it was huge. It took me hours of dialogue, journal writing, brainstorming to figure out, how do I really feel about technology and where do I want it in my life? How is it working for me? How is it not working for me? And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to, what do you mean by a philosophy of technology, and how might someone come to a place where they can understand how they could apply this to their life?
I love that you've just shared that you've done that, because that's exactly my hope for the book, really. I originally started the book as a 20-page ebook because I wrote a blog post about why I turn off my phone a day a week. And the idea that someone would deliberately turn off their phone because they think they're using it too much. Like, no one was talking about digital overuse when I started that. And so I thought I'll write a quick how-to guide to unplug. And I very quickly realized that actually the problem isn't that we don't know how to turn off our phone. It's that there are a whole lot of beliefs and paradigms and stories and identities that we layer on technology that make it impossible to disconnect and untether ourselves. And therefore, we end up being mastered by our own tools. And so that's why I spent 5 of the 7 years researching the paradigm of technology. It only took me 6 months to write the last bit, which is the practices bit, you know. And it's because I wanted to understand, well, what is our relationship with our technologies? Because we all have a relationship, and I think a lot of them are codependent. And like you said, we haven't even reflected in our Western context about the importance of reflecting on our relationship with the online world and how it impacts our heart and our habits, how it impacts us from a neuroplastic perspective, how it links in with the cultural stories of freedom and choice that so shape Western culture, and how the power that we get through tech, digital power, impacts our abilities to disconnect. So, like you would have noticed in the first more than third of the book, which is the paradigm, I really just want to show a number of big, broad perspectives going from science to psychology to religion to philosophy, and help people think deeply from multiple perspectives about why we reach for our phone last thing at night, first thing in the morning, like why we just can't disconnect. And I think it's bigger than the fact that the technologies themselves are highly addictive and designed to make us behaviorally conditioned, which is obviously a massive part of the issue. But I think it's who we are and the stories we have beyond them. And that needs to be assessed. So, yeah, thank you for doing that heart work, because that's really hard to do. But that's why I wrote the book, because unless you do the heart work, you'll never be able to sustain a habit as difficult as having no tech for a day a week, or even something as simple as charging your phone outside of your bedroom and starting and ending the day with space rather than electrocuting yourself, we saw in that Timothy Wilson study, because our behaviors are at the end of the assembly line of our beliefs and our stories. And so if you don't assess the assembly line, then it's very, very hard to tackle the behaviors.
And I want to give a little shout out here to a previous guest, Rob Krajicek, who is the founder of Humans First. And when I was interviewing him, I asked, hey, do you have some social media links so that I can tag you? And he said, well, as part of my branding, no, I'm not on social media. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. It planted a seed. And then when I read your chapter on, hey, what's your philosophy of technology? And I thought, wow, let me think about this. Here I am with a mission to help doctoral students succeed. And truly the last place they should be is scrolling through social media. Why am I there? And so again, doing that deep dive after reading your book and going through the exercises, which are awesome, by the way, I love the practical application. I love the worksheets. I have deleted my Instagram account. I have deleted my Twitter account because they aren't in line with what I value and who I am. But I didn't even realize that until I read your book.
Well, I'm a bit scared of you saying that publicly, because I think Elon Musk might chase me down if I keep telling people to turn off their Twitter accounts. And I'm scared of Elon. But no, that's fantastic.
I have this internet, Elon. I have Starlink. So
oh, that's fine. As long as we're providing some type of capitalist gain to Elon, then I'm safe. But I know that's amazing. And yeah, even when I published the book, it was pretty funny, actually, because my publisher said, okay, now put it on all your socials. And I'm like, I really don't use socials. And we kind of looked at the irony of trying. But it's very, very, very hard to promote a book if you don't use socials well. And yet, yeah, I mean, I use LinkedIn a lot just because it relates with my client base. But it's such a boring app. You know, I'm not going to get addicted quite as much as Instagram.
Daniel, yeah. LinkedIn was one I kept too, because it was in line with what I value, right?
Yeah. And that's the point.
So those questions.
That's exactly the point. So I'm not anti-tech. And actually, you know, as it might even be worth talking about that inverted U, I use tech all the time. I'm on tech probably 12 hours a day. I train people in how to get their inbox to zero, how to use technology. So it's about having an intentional life and having a philosophy of tech and making sure you know when tech is serving you and when you're being, mastered by it, and not underplaying how incredibly addictive these devices and these tools are, and how they change us from the inside out, where we can't even perceive or recognize what's happening. A bit like sleep debt. When people are in sleep debt, they think they're being productive and they highly underestimate how ineffective they are because they're so tired. That's the kind of problem we have with digital overuse. And so what we need to do is love technology, use it well, but be very, very aware that we need to unplug and continually check our heart and our head and our habits, because like an addict, if you don't disconnect or you can't disconnect, you probably have a problem.
Well, and I think that's a great segue into this day of rest, because I have always thought a day of rest sounds great, but practically wasn't something that I was probably going to practice. However, again, you present such compelling research where I had to say, Heather, you got to check this out. The research is clear. You probably think you're being more productive than you really are. What do you have to lose? Go through Daniel's worksheet, spend the hour and a half designing this day of rest. Try it out. See what happens. Profound, Daniel, profound. How much more productive I was after a day of rest. But I would not have known that. I wouldn't have felt compelled to try it had you not presented the research that really kind of pushed me to say, well, now I got to check this out.
That's great. I mean, look, I used to be a physical therapist in the States. I can't remember what you call them, but that was my first career. And, you know, clearly most of us know that if you're going to get fit and really, really strong, like at an athletic level, well, then you have to rest your body. So on the one hand, you need to stretch your muscles and tear muscle fibers until you can actually strengthen and stretch your body. But at the same time, the best athletes have rhythms and patterns where they stop being physically active, where they let their body rest in order to then perform at that higher level. Now, that's just one analogy there. You can see it in the sleep research. You can see it in the multitasking research. You can see it even the IT research, you know, IT workers who crunch to finish like some type of coding program and work enormous hours, they end up being massively unproductive for the next kind of period of time. So once they work more than, you know, I think 50 or 60 hours a week for 2 weeks straight, well, then their productivity for the next few weeks goes down to the point where it's less than if they're working 40 hours, but they're working 60 hours and they don't know that they're unproductive. And you can measure that productivity because coding is a fairly specific, measurable output, unlike, you know, a lot of the types of roles we do. So the point is we need to rest. But I think that my heartbeat with the day of rest is deeper than that. And this is why I dived into the Judeo-Christian tradition of Sabbath and digital Sabbath in my case, because I don't think we should be justifying rest from an economic output or productivity perspective. Like, it's handy to know that if we rest, we'll be more productive. But deeper than that, we are actually spiritual beings. We're humans. Why should we, you know, and we do this in American and Australian cultures, why should we be justifying having relationships with our family, enjoying the sunshine, reading books, filling our mind with joyful things, and experiencing a day of meaningful human interaction? Why should we have to justify that by the fact that it makes us more productive in the week? It's crazy. And yet that's how we think in the West. There is value in itself. And I think, like happiness, the byproduct of resting deeply and having a practice and processes and rhythm of rest from tech and from work, the byproduct is we get more productive and more successful. We have better ideas and we finish things faster, but it's valuable resting in and of itself.
And Daniel, I love that you shared that perspective, because I think a lot of the listeners might be more inclined to try this, knowing that it's an investment in productivity. But it was very interesting for me to see how I chose to spend that time and the things that emerged from it, which are sometimes difficult to articulate, but really feeling not just connected to myself and who I was, but thoroughly enjoying being present with the people that I love the most. And so I'm going to encourage people to think about maybe an adventure of a day of rest. Do you have any tips to give someone who has maybe not had a day of rest for as long as they can remember, maybe even their entire adult life?
Yes, I would say be kind on yourself, because rest is actually a skill. And it's something you need to practice. Now, that's not how many of us think in the Western world. You know, we think that we need to practice work. We practice work skills. We practice learning. But we don't think about rest in that way. We just think when we're not at work, we're resting. And yet deep rest, like deep work, requires a lot of practice. And so, you know, are you an introvert or extrovert? So what types of activities really lift you up and make you feel alive? Does rest need to be physically active or inactive? What are the kinds of activities that fill you up spiritually, mentally, relationally? And how do you build them in? And then how do you actually kind of minor on the things that actually cause you to work? So for me, reading the newspaper makes me feel, or newspaper, I sound like I'm 50. reading the news online or offline, it just makes me angry. And it just makes my heart kind of mad about the world, and all my little pet issues that I care about from a values perspective get pushed in some way. So I don't read the news on my day off. We don't talk about hard things, because there are plenty of hard things, or logistics. I hate working out whether the kids have to go for soccer practice or this or that. For me, that feels like work. And so I don't do that. Whereas for me, doing the dishes and cleaning the house and doing the windows, if I feel like doing some cleaning, well, I don't consider that work because it looks nothing like what I do day by day, which is swiping on a screen, typing, communicating. And yeah, by default, that's why I don't have my devices on for that day a week of rest, because I haven't worked out a way of being online and flipping from work mode to rest mode. Because I know from the research that my brain can't tell the difference between Outlook and Instagram. If I'm communicating using this thing called the internet for work, and then I'm just having fun and connecting with people through this thing called internet for rest, it doesn't work. I talk about a lot of that in the book. But the key is go small and work it out over time.
And I love that consistently you give that message through the book, go small, this is a practice. So you talk about a day of rest, daily pause, different types of rhythms and patterns that people can check out and try. But really, it's all embedded in this context of we're living in a culture of clutter, and a lot of that clutter is coming to us through a screen. And I think that's a nice segue to your brand new book that I am still waiting for Amazon to drop off, because a lot of my listeners have kids, have grandkids.
Yes. Thank you for that. So it's called Raising Tech Healthy Humans, so how to reset your children's tech habits and give them a great start to life. And look, I wrote it because I speak at conferences with leaders and managers. So, you know, the majority of my time is with executives and senior workers. And I talk about making space and the paradigm of technology and how we might unplug and live a better life and be more productive. And the number one question that almost always comes up has nothing to do with anything I've talked about. It's like, can you help me make space with my kids? When should I get them a phone? How do I help them with screen time? Do you know what I mean? And it's such a pain point for us as professional parents, as workers, trying to juggle so many different things. And we know that technology is important for our kids, but at the same time, we can see so clearly, like more clearly than with adults, how overuse impacts their health and their habits and how they get so absorbed by their screens. And so, yeah, I wrote a very practical short 2-hour read that goes through the research around kids and mental development with tech, and then gives a whole lot of very specific advice, not just about tech. I called it Raising Tech Healthy Humans. I wanted to call it Raising Humans, but my publisher said you had to put the tech bit in, because I think where we get stuck generally is that we focus on cyber safety and screen time and tech habits and what apps we should use. And there's so much of that conversation that as a parent, you just become overwhelmed and you give up, because even as an expert, I find some of that just completely overwhelming. So my heart is to paint a vision again of humanity. You know, what's the kind of life we want to live? What's the kind of life we want our kids to live? And that usually doesn't involve always being online. It usually involves having the depth and breadth of life with and without a screen. And from within that bigger vision, then let's work out how to place tech in its place and to raise up our kids with that bigger vision of humanity. Does that make sense?
It does. And I will make sure I have the links to that book as well. But Daniel, I want to thank you for spearheading this movement of space makers, of investing in spending time to understand what does it mean to be human in the digital age. And so all you listeners out there, I promise you there will be practical, positive outcomes from understanding how to create space that will help you in your doctoral program. But beyond that, you know that my mission is to help you keep your sanity, your health, and your relationships intact while you're on this journey. And I have no doubt that you will get a lot of value out of Daniel's work. So thank you for being on today's show. And before we sign off, would you like to leave the audience with a quote or some final words of wisdom?
In terms of wisdom, I think one of the things about tackling anything like a 7-year book or a doctoral program, it's very easy to feel like you just get stuck because the end is so far away and it's very hard to draw it into the present. So my philosophy, we've talked about making space, doing small steps. I think it's the same with achieving anything. Just keep remembering the end game, which is not getting the piece of paper. It's, you know, what is the why that called you into that in the first place? What is the benefit you'll bring into the world, and how will you serve others through what you're doing? And then keep drawing it back into today you know, whether it be trying to be less addicted to tech or trying to make sure you read that next journal article or write those next 100 to, you know, 500 words or you have that next conversation, keep drawing it into what can I do this day, this week, this month to take that next step to living the life I want to live and to walking into that kind of place.
Daniel, again, thank you so much for agreeing to spend some time with me today. It was so much fun.
Thanks again. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you're ready to plan your day of rest, be sure to check out the resources in the show notes. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Until then, if you're looking for more ways to invite joy in your journey, check out the free resources at expandyourhappy.com. You'll find downloads like an article I wrote titled The Doctoral Journey, 12 Things You Need to Know That They Probably Won't Tell You. You'll also find a PDF that organizes all podcasts by the 7 steps detailed in the Happy Doc Student Handbook, which you can also find on the website. Finally, if you're looking for a Happy Doc Student swag, I've got that too. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and YouTube channel. And if you want to make my day, rate and review so that together we can change the way doctoral education is delivered and experienced. Hey, one more thing. Just a quick reminder that the information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only.